Mickey Hart here. You're listening to GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Hello and welcome to the GAA brought to you by AIB. I'm Conan Doherty, and yet again there is no Colin Parkinson. Listen, this might just be a complete coincidence, but he's been on holiday for 8 days, I think, and the website has had 4 different interviews with 4 different Dublin players. Well, he's off, Dublin players come to talk to you. That's the pattern, Conor Heenan. What do you think of that?
Coincidence, surely. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I want to start off. We've got Paul Geaney coming up on the show. We've got a great chat with Paul Hertie as well, having just announced his retirement, just the 19 club titles. He's actually raging he didn't make it 20. They lost in the Armagh semi-final on Saturday night, and he had to cut his losses at 39 years of age with just 19.
I think he started at 16, didn't he?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I want to talk top of the show here. St. Bridget's programme changes. Like, no, this is probably irks with journalists all over the country, probably irks with fans going to games and they've paid money for the programme. But let me just give you a feel for how they actually named their team. There were six changes to the starting team
bad.
On the program, which is okay. Like, well, it is bad. It's over a third of the team, so
yeah,
it's bad
yeah.
enough. So 6 changes coming from the substitute bench, but only one player actually played in the same position then from the team that actually lined out. So the numbers went all over the place. Conor McKeown from Independent was there at Parnell Park, but it was Bridges against Ballymun, Dublin quarter final, and 2 halfbacks go back into the fullback line. Number 12, Alan McCarrick, goes back to fullback. Mark Cahill comes in. There's two guys brought in off the bench to play halfback. Number 10, Gavin Kane, goes to wingback. Number 14, John O'Loughlin, goes in midfield. There's another sub brought in, and Cahill Doyle into midfield. Paddy Andrews moves up to centre half forward. He was lined out number 8. 2 more subs brought in there alongside him. Number 11 goes to corner forward. Number 4, Lorcan McCarthy, goes to corner forward as well. I mean, like, sometimes I think we're guilty in the journalist world of thinking that people give a shit about what we're complaining about, and, like, you know, maybe the ordinary guy going to a match doesn't actually care about how teams switch around. But is this some sort of mind games, like, coming from the Bridges guys, because they lost by 8 points?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I've been part of teams that have done this, and I've been part of plenty of teams that have it done to them. They've played against the opposition, they've done it, and in my many years of experience in it, I've yet to see it have any benefit whatsoever. I mean, like, I don't know really who the management are trying to fool, because if Dublin is like anywhere else, if it's like Mayo, for example, the first time the management of the opposition and the players will see the programme is in the dressing room beforehand.
Yeah.
They're probably going to know enough about the team that they're playing against anyway. They've probably done their analysis, so they're looking at that and thinking, well, we know that he's not going to play there, and we know that he's not going to play there. So, like, I don't know who they're trying to fool, you know. I don't know, is it a thing that, you know, Jim Gavin has had this kind of, he has long wanted a squad number system to come into place. So, like, at the start of the year, at the start of the championship, he might name 30 Dublin players, and they're all given squad numbers akin to a Premier League team or whatever. And then that, he doesn't, rather than have to name his team for the media 2 or 3 days beforehand, I think he only does it a day beforehand now, but that he can just, as you would with a soccer team, just name it an hour before throw-in. And I don't know, is it a thing that, like, for this programme, they would have had to name a team 5-6 days in advance, and it's kind of like, well, listen, we're not ready, so feck it, here, take this team, you know, whether you like it or not, this is what we're going to give you.
You see, I like that idea of having a number set, because now this famous under 16 team that I would have taken back in the day, the only experience I have to draw on, like, we might have been guilty of doing it, but only because I liked certain players with a certain number. Like, so say I had Mayo, Lee
okay.
Keegan would always be number 5 no matter where he's playing, because I think he's a number 5.
Okay.
It just fits.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not me trying to trick anybody, it's just like, I think that player's number 6, I think that suits him, that position. I hate when Jamie Connolly's got number 18 on him, for example. He should always have 12, even when he's centre half forward, he should have number 12, because that
yeah,
suits
that's
him.
True, yeah. It suits them because they carved out a niche in that position.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So I don't like what is going on here? Like, are they? Have you been in change rooms where people thought we're going to get one over on these guys?
Because we've named a program that's completely different. Absolutely not.
Because you're just standing there, like you're not going for a number. Where's number 10? I'm working number 10. But, you're standing here. Whoever comes to
work. But that's
you.
The thing. In a dressing room, the management will say, "Well, listen, lads, you have to wear these numbers. You know you're not playing there, but you have to." So you might have worn 7 all year, and then all of a sudden you're given 13. You're like, "Why is this?" "Oh, it's just we had it in the program." Do you know, the opposition team, if they've any sort of analysis done, if it's for a big game like that, if they've any sort of analysis done, they know, they'll have a fair idea how you're going to line out anyway. It's different from playing a dummy team, let's say, a week or two before. You'll often hear this. So, like, say, if they have a league game or if they've played each other earlier in the championship and they know they're going to meet further down the line, that they'll play a completely different team. That's different. That might kind of seep into the opposition manager's thoughts. They're like, "Well, they did this time. So, you know, they're going to do the same again." But actually naming them the programme, I've yet to see any benefit that anyone can gain from it.
I've actually experienced what you're mentioning there. Not a dummy team, but we played a team in the league 6 days before a championship match. And there was similar enough teams that would have played 6 days later. But what they did was just let us play the way we wanted to play. We had a sweeper. We thought we were tricking everyone at the time with a sweeper. No one would know. What we actually did was rotate the sweepers and thought that no one could figure it out. 6 days later, like, that team just let us beat them because they were safe in the league. We needed the points anyway. Maybe we were up for it more. 6 days later, they just planted a man up in our back line
on the sweeper,
occupying the sweeper, and the sweeper could not sweep anymore. That guy scored 2 goals in the first 5 minutes. They absolutely annihilated us. They just sat back and watched us beat them in the league and then just beat us weren't accounted in the championship.
But did they change their team for the programme? That's a good question.
I wasn't looking at the programme either. Like, you know, so this idea, Bridget's like, Shane Supple in goals is the only one that stayed in his position. But if I'm from Ballymun, I'm not coming in thinking, where is Lorcan McCarthy playing? Like, you know, no disrespect to any of the players, but you have got your own game plan, especially those Ballymun guys. Like, look at the talent in that squad. Like, they're not getting so preoccupied, I'd hope not anyway, by how Bridget's are lining out and where they're lining out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're in agreement.
100%.
We're going to move on to Special Congress. So obviously it was a big weekend for the hurlers especially. So what's coming into play as of 2018? This fixtures is going to be cleared right up for the hurling, especially for club players. It's a great thing. So February to March will be National League only, county players only, clubs will be training. April will be club games exclusively. May to July will be inter-county championship games. So that's it's all being sort of earmarked. This is when counties plays, this is when clubs plays. August will be the All-Ireland Hurling Final. If you're not involved in the All-Ireland Hurling Final, then your club is back out again. So you're playing in April and then you're playing from August onwards. Like, you know when you're playing. That's only a good thing. Footballers must be jealous of that now.
Yeah, and it's the summer is going to be really front-loaded with hurling. Like, you're talking around May, June, there's going to be a lot of... There's 5 teams apiece in the two in the Leinster and the Munster group, so there's going to be a lot of like really big championship games at the beginning of the summer.
Yeah,
and then come the end of the summer, it's going to be the Super 8. So it's going to be hurling at the start of the summer, football at the finish. And now, I think the reaction has been largely positive. But then, you'll always have kind of the polar opposite. I think one Waterford delegate described it as potentially the worst decision in the history of the GAA. So just to get a level of the type of reaction, the two sides of the reaction. But it all falls into what the Super 8s will do as well, is that it reduces the training to games ratio for inter-county players, and I think that's what they all want.
What interests me most though about Special Congress, which took place at the weekend, is the new kick-out motion that's coming into football. The ball will now have to cross the 20-metre line. It will still have to go 13 metres, but it has to go beyond the 20-metre line, so you cannot kick it sideways, you can't kick it backwards. Who was it kicked it out of play this year?
Sherry keeper, Brian Kelly, yeah. Yeah, in the replay against me.
So he'll be delighted about this motion, I would have thought. Yeah. So it's come into play. Jardiff Burns suggested it, and he's saying... Sorry, actually Dublin have voiced opposition towards it, of course they have, because it worked very well for Stephen Cluxton. But I actually sort of agree with it. It's Mick Seaver's come out and said, I think he's the vice chairman, but he's come out and said, we are punishing the team that wants to innovate and rewarding the teams who want to play negatively. This rewards the people that can't play ball properly. I don't really agree with that last part, but we are punishing people who are innovating and thinking of ways to get around certain things, and I don't really see the problem. I don't really care about this rule. It's fine, like, it might encourage people to go forward a bit more, but I don't see the problem of kicking the ball sideways. If anything, it gets the ball in play quicker and we get a quicker restart.
I didn't have a big deal with the way the kickouts were going either, and I didn't have a huge deal with the short kickouts, but I suppose he definitely has a point as well. This could be perceived to be not anti-Dublin, but kind of, if Dublin were clearly the biggest beneficiaries of the short kickouts. I think Cluxton had 11 out of 13 in the second half of the final that went inside the 21.
Yeah.
So you could be seeing it like, oh, okay, well, that's another reason why Dublin are on top. So let's try and kind of bring them down. But I suppose what it does do, it'll in theory increase the risk of losing possession for goalkeepers. But you're on about there about kind of it's punishing the teams that'll innovate. But I think the teams that it is more likely to punish, the likes of Dublin and actually Mayo, for example, have gone very short. I think they're the most likely teams to innovate again. So you know, Tyrone tried for, I'd say, 10 minutes to push up on Dublin's kickouts in the semi-final. Then Cluxton just bangs a 65-yard kick out down on Niall Scully's lap. So I don't think it's going to be a thing that, oh, you've taken those short kickouts away from Stephen Cluxton, he's going to struggle next year. He'll find a way.
Well, see, this is it. And I actually hate when Stephen Cluxton gets referred to as a short kickout master, because he hasn't become so famous for his kickouts because he's able to kick it 5 metres to Johnny Cooper. Like, Stephen Cluxton can put the ball wherever he wants on the pitch, and that's why he's so good. Actually, what this does is encourage Stephen Cluxton to use the skills that has made him Stephen Cluxton. Like, you know, he is better, Dublin are better from when he is kicking the ball 40 yards straight into someone's chest, like so many other keepers can't do. Any keeper in the world can pass the ball 10 metres out to the cornerback that's standing inside the 21. But Stephen Cluxton can find anybody all over the pitch. You look like you're about to disagree.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, for me, for me, like, it's to improve the spectacle, basically. But for me, anytime Dublin did short kickouts, it didn't affect the spectacle of the game. There were games I watched earlier on the year where if you were playing against a team that was defensive, basically, and the other team were doing short kickouts, that they just immediately, you just see this 6-7 bodies just weren't even looking at the ball, just turned around to get into their defensive shape, just allowed the kickouts to go short and said, we'll let you have the ball, but now you have to break down this wall. But this, what this rule does do is give an incentive, is a real incentive for other teams to push up. I mean, you have a 21-yard area in front of the hole that the ball can't go into. So, like as I said earlier, like 11 of Cluxton's 13 kickouts in the second half, the All-Ireland final, went into that area. So if Mayo knew that Cluxton couldn't go there, that would give them a real incentive to real drive on and push up. So I suppose, like, together with the mark, I think we were a bit sceptical about the mark around this time last year.
Yeah.
It's turned it, like, it's, I don't think anyone would say that it hasn't been a success since.
I think it only takes you to win one mark yourself to think, oh, this is great, I'm not getting tackled.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. But we've seen since, especially teams like Kildare, Kevin Feely was spectacular this year.
Yeah.
So I think together with this rule of getting it beyond the 21 and the mark, it's really trying to encourage high fielding. So, I'm definitely going to give it the benefit of the doubt for now.
But do you know what annoys me, or not annoys me, but it worries me about these rules? And I think I'm predisposed to they sort of oppose them anyway.
Yeah.
But I worry when they come in. Like, look at, like, when Donegal won the All-Ireland, suddenly there's a football review committee and we're talking about ways to change the game, stop defensive system. This team has just come from nowhere and won the All-Ireland, and we're talking about stopping them doing that. Suddenly now, wouldn't we love a Donegal to come along? But now, like, Dublin are using the rules that we have changed, and, like, they're doing it fairly, and they're thinking, how can we gain an advantage in the pitch? And they're leading the way constantly, but it's almost like we're not happy that Dublin have won 3 in a row, so how can we level the playing field for everyone else? I don't think that's a reason to change the rule. I think it's a reason to stop Dublin being better than everyone.
You think that's the reason that the rule is coming in? Is that the reason why 82% of delegates voted in favour of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not because of the spectacle.
To try and limit Dublin, I think most of it would be down to limiting Dublin.
Okay.
You don't agree?
Not particularly, no.
I
agree. There's definitely an element to that, but I don't think that's the prime motive behind the rule in the first place.
But, like, how bad, like, we've spoken about this before, how bad of a spectacle is it kicking the ball to the side? Like, this, you're saying, like, this limits the space that Dublin can kick the ball to. Suddenly it makes it easier for our teams to attack their kickers.
But what I was saying earlier is that, like, I don't think it's been a bad spectacle when Dublin do it, because Dublin are so kind of committed to the attack that they just do it to secure possession, then they're trying to get down the field as quickly as possible. But they're brilliant at breaking down mass defences. Whereas where it has been a bad spectacle is against teams that just retreat into a mass defence and build up, because the kick out has only gone to the corner flag or close enough to it, build up play by the team who gets that kick out is ponderously slow. And I think it affects the spectacle. That would just be my take on it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to speed up TV cameras anyway, which is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
In GA, we're still not going to see those kickouts because we'll be showing a replay of somebody hitting a wide. And
yeah, well, that's true. Like a byproduct of it for Mayo fans, like Cluxton didn't seem to be as under much pressure to deliver those short kickouts as David Clark was this year. Oh my God, there was a couple, particularly the Kerry games in Croke Park, where he would do the kick out within 20 metres. He'd have to curl it. He doesn't ping them like Cluxton does. He kind of tends to float them. And Mayo were like, Tom Barrison's have to sprint 50 yards to get a ball in his own 20, and he just gave it back to him again. So less heart and mouth moments for Mayo fans next year.
Another thing that's arising, there was no ruling made in Special Congress, but Jarrett Burns has spoken about it. He said, people have come up to us, and you can't really knee-jerk on the basis of cynicism in the last 5 or 10 minutes of All-Ireland Final, but he said people are coming up and they want change. They're coming to the committee asking for change to sort out cynical play that's happening. Again, sort of what I'm saying about we're knee-jerking because Dublin are winning primary possession. Dublin won the All-Ireland. Dublin dragged Mayo down for 2 or 3 minutes. We need to change the rules. People are coming up to Jarrett Burns. He's saying it's not going to change. This committee's not going to do anything. Perhaps the next one. Now, again, I have a problem with that because I think there's already a rule in place. Now, it's not being applied correctly. It's probably not the best rule. It definitely needs work done. But there's a rule in place called the black card that directly stops you being able to cynically and systematically foul a team for 70 minutes. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Because if you get 3 black cards, the next black card your team gets, it's a sending off. If you're already in a yellow card, you get a black card, you're sent off. If you've already made 6 subs and you get a black card, you're sent off. Like you can't get somebody on to replace you. So you cannot go out for 70 minutes and drag down a team because you'll get punished accordingly. I think the rules are there for it. And I think there's a big difference between cynicism and cheating. Now, I don't want to keep coming down on the side of Dublin here, but like, yeah, we all would have agreed that we would have done what Dublin did in the last 2 minutes. But what I would say is that it's not cheating. People have come out very hard over the last 2 weeks and said they cheated their way to an All-Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
They did it in an isolated incident, which they can only do because you can't do it for 70 minutes. But cheating is something that you do underhand that you hope that people don't see because you have to sort of keep it in secret for it to work. If you take drugs, if somebody finds out, you're suspended.
Yeah.
You need them to not find out about it. If you dive, you hope the referee doesn't see you diving, and then you get rewarded for it. If he does see you diving, you get a yellow card, should be a red.
Yeah, I suppose by strict definition of cheating, it would be to gain an unfair advantage by whatever means possible. So I suppose you could bracket it as cheating. My issue is probably the same as yours, in that in the fallout from the All-Ireland, which has been, it's still going on, it's like we're 3 weeks after the All-Ireland. Yeah. It's been as toxic a fallout from an All-Ireland as I can remember.
It's because Dublin won though.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but cheating, like what actually defines cheating? Like there's been a definite blurring of the lines of, I mean, the most minor incident and the most severe incidents are being paired together. Yeah. Under that bracket of cheating. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair on Dublin particularly. What I'd have issue with Jarrett Burns is that he says it'd be a knee-jerk reaction to what happened in the All-Ireland final, but I wouldn't say that that's the case at all. And I'm not meaning to rain on Dublin's parade in particular, but there's been a few incidents, like they've won so many close games over the years, that what makes them such a good team. But in a lot of those games, like despite what Jim Gavin might want to say about them not being a cynical team, they've employed cynical tactics to do it. So this year's All-Ireland final was the most blatant example, because 4 or 5 players wrestled, you know, the opposition to the ground at the same time. But going back to Kerry in the league, Kieran Kilkenny got a black card in the last minute of that. Going back to Kerry, I think it was the 2016 semi-final, Cormac Costello again involved. I think he was pinning a Kerry player to the ground. 2013 All-Ireland final did something similar to Mayo. And that's just picking out some high-profile incidents with Dublin. A lot of teams have been guilty of it. So to say that it's a knee-jerk reaction to the All-Ireland final, I don't think is fair. And I think you have a brilliant point about the black card. You can't do this stuff consistently for 70 minutes. And I think when people give out about the black card, they actually ignore that. Well, because the black card is in, a load of cynical incidents aren't actually taking place anymore. But it still doesn't. Unless there's been 3 black cards issued out already, and you've all your subs used,
it's worth
doing. In the last few minutes, it's absolutely worth doing. And there's no, that you know, the players are getting in the neck for this, but like there's no prohibitive punishment that'll actually stop you from doing it.
Yeah, and I agree that if you look at that Dublin incident, I know this might hurt you as a Mayo fan, but I don't think that won them the All-Ireland. I get that's what they were doing. They were targeting But after it all, after Joe McQuillan dished out a black card and a yellow, which probably should have been a black, after he took action, Mayo still had the ball. David Clark still had
the
kick.
Well, they didn't, because he kicked it out over the... David Clark kicked it out.
Exactly,
the
but they still had that, and there was going to be 2 minutes added on anyway.
I know.
He kicked it out of play, and then Mayo didn't get the ball back. So that was sort of what won Dublin. And that's why I don't think, I probably agree, it's not a knee-jerk reaction. And I agree that something needs to be done to stop teams being able to do that so easily in the last 2 minutes. But on Dublin's case, I don't know if that's what won them the All-Ireland. I think what won them the All-Ireland was how ruthlessly and heartbreakingly they kept the ball for 2 minutes, and everyone in the country, in the world, wanted them to lose the ball, but they just kept it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I would never claim that that's what won them the All-Ireland. It helped, but I still think it's absolutely fair to raise it as an issue and potentially suggest punishments to stop it from happening further down the line, you know? I mean, like, the reaction from every player that's been asked have been like, of course, like, even the Dublin players were... Flick McMahon was like, oh, I throw my jersey, you know, Paul Geaney's kill or be killed, you know, I do the exact same. I've heard Lee Keegan say, yeah, well, he wouldn't know what he'd do unless he was in the position, but like, this is a guy who threw his GPS at Dean Rock to win a free kick, you know he'd do something similar. And while, until there is a prohibitive punishment in place, players are going to do that. So it should be taken out of players' hands. And then just a rule put in place that they know that if they're going to do it, well, then they're going to be punished so severely that they're not going to do it in the first place, which has worked with the black card. I mean, you don't third man tackle the guy anymore. You don't deliberately drag him to the ground because you know you're off, unless you're going to do it in the last minute and you know your team can afford it.
Okay, we'll leave that there. Retirements. Brendan Bugler of Clare has hung up the boots. 32?
32, yeah.
Young enough. I know, did he spend the season on the bench?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think we're ill-equipped to have this conversation about hurling, are we?
we'll do our best. No, my thing about Brendan Bugler, I always remember, and actually it's funny, Shane McGrath was tweeting about it last night. They're two members of a dying brigade that celebrate Freeze, the awarding of Freeze, more vigorously than they actually celebrate a score. And like, he was particularly, that was particularly evident when Clare won the All-Ireland in 2013. Now, he was really good, remember him being really good that season, but... yeah, he just probably thinks that he's not gonna, you know, be a guaranteed starter anymore. So that's fair enough.
I like the statement though. It was just no nonsense, straight to the point. Wish to confirm I'm retiring from the County from Football from Clare. Thank you to everyone. Wish to acknowledge and sincerely thank my family and friends. Went through everybody, University of Limerick and Clare. Thank you. Full stop. Just, and I know Willie's got a big problem with statements. I like statements like Paul Hertig, for example, who we're going to talk to in a couple of minutes. Imagine he doesn't put out a statement after 23 years of service to his club and football, like, you know, and after all the service to Armagh, like, the man,
until he had done it, I hadn't actually realised. I knew he'd won a lot, but I hadn't realised.
Well, exactly, that's our reason for doing it. Maybe maybe Brendan should have been clever and listed out his acknowledgements. I'll give you an example just why I like statements and think they're important. Like Paddy Bradley in Derry, I'm sure everybody listening knows Paddy Bradley, but
they do after listening to you.
He's never actually retired. You know, he, like, maybe it's different from where he can have a statement, but he's, like, I remember talking to him at the time, and he said he just wasn't in the squad 1 year under Brian McIver. Didn't get a phone call. They say, you're not going to be picking the squad. You know, didn't say that, like, he's retired or anything. He was still available. He had a couple of bad injuries, and that was it. I think Derry went in all the way. Just thought, right, we need to build from the ground up. We need young players coming in.
Yeah.
And Paddy Bradley was just there, having not retired, nothing. And that, like, honestly, that, like, you get no closure then as a Derry fan. Like, I grew up and this man was Derry. Like, he was the reason I was going to games every single week. Paddy Bradley, like, and there's just nothing. There's no full stop. There's no thank you. No thank you to the fans. What about me down in Clare? You know, we went to Clare twice in 1 week because the first time we went, it got postponed. We went down 6 days later for a National League match. You know, just to watch people like Paddy Bradley, and then it's over with, no statements. So I think statements are important.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And like, you mentioned Paddy Bradley there, you know, just not getting in the panel this year. You nearly have to be high profile enough to release a statement.
Yeah.
I mean, if you release a statement, you're retired. somebody might come back and say, well, you weren't going to make the panel next year anyway.
Do you know, I have released a statement before, you know. I've retired from inter-county football. I didn't never got called up, but I've just officially retired.
What, you released a statement?
Yeah.
What did your statement say?
Oh, it was just I want to thank everyone, and it's with a heavy heart that I announced my retirement after zero games with Derry. It's been a great memory. I'll always be a fan. I look forward next year to standing in the stands and supporting.
Word has it you were just on the cusp of the panel that year as well.
Well, that's it. It's off the table now. It's my decision. All right, enough of that nonsense, because we've got one of the most successful footballers of all time on the line. Let me just read this out. 19 Armagh Championship titles, 11 Ulster Club Championship titles, 6 All-Ireland Club medals, 5 Ulster titles with Armagh, 1 All-Ireland Inter-County medal, 2 National League medals. Paul Hertie, it's been a pretty decent 23 years.
I suppose when you read it like that, yeah. It's pretty impressive, all right, yeah. Listen, I'm very fortunate and blessed, I suppose, to come along at a time when, you know, so many other good players came along, you know, and to keep the sort of success going throughout the years, you know, it is a long time, and it's a real sort of, you know, confidence in what the club was doing and everything, to have that fear about the talent continues coming through, because it wasn't the same band of players the whole way through. You know, the world changes every year on year, people retiring, people leaving for different things and one another, but you know, it was great to be part of that there, and I suppose I was very blessed to be able to play for so long without maybe, I suppose, injuries or anything else getting in the way of what was ultimately a real long career.
Why now, Paul?
Well, I sort of always sort of said I didn't really want to play into my 40s. I'm 39 now at the moment, yeah. So I said I'd play as long as possible, but I didn't want to play to my 40s. And then when we got, I suppose when I captained the team in 2015, we got 19 that time, and I wanted to see, could I try and get, you know, get the one more just to round it off to an even number at the 20, but that wasn't to be. But, you know, I can't complain, really. You know, that was just been possibly a bit greedy or a wee bit, you know, on a personal note, just to round it off. But listen, here, I'm delighted with how my career has went. You know, it didn't go well for us on Saturday night, and that's just the way sport goes sometimes, you know.
And this might sound silly, but will you regret not getting the 20th club title?
No, not really. Listen, it's 19. It's fantastic. I'm really proud of that. You know, it's a great achievement. You know, I couldn't have done it without everybody else that helped me along the way. You know, from that first year in 1996. You know, Jim McConville was the oldest player. He was our captain and inspiration at the time. You know, the whole way through to the last one, where, you know, you had likes of, you know, Dosh and O'Neill and that coming through to help us and that. There, young players at 18 and 19 coming through. So, you know, it's been a long, long road, but you know, it's been a really, really enjoyable journey. You know,
I was just going to ask you about 1996. You hadn't won a club championship in 10 years back then. What was the landscape like when you were coming into the team?
Well, I came in 1995. I was only 16 at the time, and Big Joe Kiernan called me in 1985, and you know, it was just at the time where really Oisin was on the panel a couple of years, Anthony Cunningham, there was an influx of really good footballers there. They were 19, 20, and then you had the McEntee coming on, Francie Bellia, Gavin Comiskey, Cal Short, you know, really, really good band of players. And that gelled together with all the players being Donal Murta and Jim McConville. And then that first year, there was actually a documentary went on that year. We played Mullabon in the, I think it was the semi-finals or something. That year. And there was a documentary done the morning game. So there was a really big hype about that year. And, you know, we were beaten that year in the semi-finals, I think, by 2 or 3 points, whatever it was. And that was on the telly, and there was big hype. And, you know, it really went round the town, and then Tramullabon went on and won the county championship, went on to win the Ulster Club at the time. So there's no doubt at that time that their 95 victory, you know, spurred us on and spurred us into gear, give us sort of extra motivation for the following year. And then the following year, it really was, you know, hook or by crook that we went out and it was all guns blazing for a county championship. And then I suppose we done that, and the rest you could say was history.
And why did Joe come to you at that age, Paul? Had you been fully developed? Like what sort of shape were you in at 16?
At 16, I wasn't fully developed. I wouldn't think. I was tall and big. I was probably lankier than I am now. I wasn't as heavy, but or muscular, should I say? but I was playing minor at that age. I was playing. I was goalkeeper the whole way up through, and I suppose I was probably earmarked for the seniors and further from young enough age. But I was playing well enough. But to get the call up at 16, I suppose I was a wee bit shocked as well. And then I sort of, you know, the first league game on the bench that year against Sarsfields, and then I came in the second league game. Aidan McShane was the goalkeeper at the time, and then I came in the second game, and it was against Silverbridge, our near neighbours, which at the time they were going really well. They'd won a couple of leagues before that, and they are really sort of favourites for championship at that particular time. And we went out to a league game at Silverbridge, and it was one of the most daunting things I ever faced. I think there was about 1,500 people at the game, at a league game, local rivalry derby, where it was hell for leather.
Yeah.
And it was some baptism of fire into your first senior league game. But you know, that stood me in good stead. I did okay on that day, and you know, everything sort of spawned from there.
Would you have been targeted, do you think, at that age by opposition teams, thinking get it on top of the young lad?
Oh, I'm sure any young fella coming into the team, you would have been, you know, let's see what this was made of. let's try him out. But yeah, the likes of, you know, Jared Burns and his brother as well, all big men, and Paul McShane, the minor manager, I would have played against all them sort of boys, and Kevin Burns, and you know, there was a lot of big Kenneth McCray, a lot of players that time, you know, were, you know, playing very well for Silverbridge at the time, and you know, sort of, you know, household names in the area, and you know, it was a real daunting time for me. But I came through it all right, and you know, everything, you know, was a big experience for me, and everything sort of came from that, you know.
Was there an older keeper in the squad at the time that was probably giving you a bit of a hard time for coming in, this young plucky 16-year-old thinking he can take his place?
Aidan McShane was the keeper before me, and then that was it, really. I think he was more called in probably more so for cover at the time, but I think Aidan then picked up an injury, and that's, so he was an older guy than me, obviously, and I don't know what happened. He got an injury, and it was sort of a long term thing, and that sort of finished him, really. So then I think Jarlath McConville came in then as cover for me at the time.
Yeah.
And he was an older guy. He'd won actually championships out field back in 86, you know, from the 10 years previous to that. So he was there to cover me after that, you know.
Yeah, I suppose even just to take you back a little bit further, I saw, like, it was a lovely statement you put out, but you thanked your mother and father for the early years, and were they the biggest influences in getting you into playing football, and were you always going to be a keeper?
No, everybody wants to be the full forward, don't they? Well, that was me too, but I soon learned sort of early enough that you know, my place wasn't goal, so I did play outfield certainly for when I was there, probably, you know, in the underage, when I was in, you know, the oldest bracket, I would have been out to field because I was the biggest and bigger and stronger than most of them. So I played out the field. But then, as I was maybe a year or two younger in the under 14s, when I was 13, I suppose I was always a goalkeeper, you know. And I sort of found out from that I would be a goalkeeper. Tim Gregory, who's synonymous around the club, you know, threw me in. I think it was under 10 or under 12 game. And I sort of had a bit of a storm. I sort of saved everything that came in that day, and then sort of that was it. That was the baptism there, and oh, put him in goal. That was it from then on, you know.
And so, did you try to get out again throughout your underage career?
Every game, every game. But it soon became realizing to me that, you know, goals was the spot for me. So
yeah,
that was the way it turned out.
And obviously, the thing has changed like immensely in the last two decades? Like, how different do you think being a goalkeeper is now than what it was when you first came in?
I think goalkeeper possibly is one of the most important positions on the field now. Whereas, you know, when you came in first, it was a case of put the ball down and hoof it as hard as far away as you can from the goals, you know, down to where most teams always want the big men around the middle of the field and they just fight for it. And now it's developed into your a sweeper keeper sort of type thing. You know, you're pinpointing your kickouts, which, you know, a kickout is a free kick essentially. And, you know, if you're just humping around the field, it is a lottery, you know, whereas you try and, you know, probably play the percentages with your kickout and try and win possession from them. So, you know, every attack now spawns from that. And then I suppose back then too, it was a lot more man for man. You know, the sweeper systems weren't really that, you know, people weren't really that much into them. It was, you know, man for man, 15 on 15, and you just, you had a 50-50 chance with kickouts that time, or if you're a really good fielder of the ball with a good pair of hands, you know, it was lumped out to them. Whereas now Everton's built from the back, you have these short kickouts, you know, obviously Cluxton has perfected it, and it's just, you know, cornerbacks, halfbacks, they pick up the ball and it's hand pass City the whole way up the field. So, you know, it really has developed from being a bit part of the game to being probably an instrumental part of the game, being a goalkeeper and being able to kick the ball accurately. You know, it's not a 70-yard lump anymore. It's, you know, it's 20, 30, 40-yard place kicks at all times nearly now.
It's interesting you say 70-yard lump, because I think you would have had about a 110-yard lump. Like, are people missing something? Like, your kickouts used to remind me a bit of Rory Delap's throw-ins for Stoke City. It was like, when you had a kickout, it was almost a chance for Cross McGlenn or Armagh to attack. Anything could happen in the opposition 45. Is that like something that people are missing now, not doing it?
Possibly, yeah. I suppose when you had like a radius of maybe 80 yards or whatever it was, you know, and many a time it did happen that scores did come, you know, one kick for me into the forward or half forward hands and it went over the bar, and that happened. It happened regular enough with the kind of players that I was lucky enough to play with. But, you know, there could be something like that again. You know, the way if teams push up on you, they're going to, you know, you have that option of going long. But the way things are now, teams leave the full back line available for kickouts, and, you know, no keeper's not going to turn down a 10-yard pass to the fullback or cornerback to start an attack from. So it's a balancing act really for management and everything else with their tactics, what to do. That a chance of 70 or 80 yards, you know, 50-50 ball down to the midfielders or half forwards, or they go with 100% possession, whereas they hit their cornerbacks, and maybe most forward lanes now aren't pressing the kickouts as much as they used to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think the most incredible thing about your career, or the longevity of it, is the fact that you're up every morning at 5 o'clock. Like, how have you managed to do that for so long?
That's a good question. Because I wouldn't be one for going to bed early either. Like, I'd sit up when, you know, it'd be a 11:30, 12 o'clock, man, switching through the channels type of thing. trying to see what's on. But I've done that most of my life. I've been always up early. You know, from day one, even from I was a young fellow, I was up. And my first job was in Newry before I went to Dublin. But I was always up and in for 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, I was up at 5:15 and had to be in. So.
And it was a milk delivery round you're doing.
No, I was actually an electrician by trade, but I fell into the milk after sort of the boom went.
Yeah.
Bang, as I say. And Hughie Morgan, who's used to sponsor Armagh, had a job for me at that time. So he was kind enough to give me a job, and he had a small milk run at the going at the time, and then he pulled me and a couple of boys in, and we got it going, and ended up in the Dublin with the milk, and I was sort of sales repping for him first, and then he ended up buying a lorry, and I was the only one who had a license to drive the lorry. And ended up, you know, no one else to do it, so I ended up in the lorry and doing the deliveries in around Dublin.
So you're up at 5 o'clock every day, you're getting back around four, and in more recent times you've had four children then when you get back at four before you head out to training?
Yeah, back and forth, do the homeworks, get a bit of dinner, get the children to bed, 7:30, train into the 8, so straight up into the field. But sure, I'm not the only father doing that type of thing. You know, I'm sure a lot of guys out there and possibly girls in their sports are doing the same sort of thing. But you know, it's a full life. But sure, you know, that's the way it is. It's a rat race every day, and we all have to get on and going up to the field and being with the lads. It's a real, although you're up there to bust yourself and do as well as you possibly can, it's a social thing too. You're right, you know, it's a release. It's, you know, you're talking with your peers, you're having the crack. It's not all doom and gloom, you know. It's training does be a good bit of crack in cross as well, you know. So it was good fun too.
And when you're not training, you're in the gym. So, like, but basically, like, this is every day, and this is, what's that, 15, 16 hours before you really get home and get to relax?
That's it, yeah. That's why I set up. You don't get to watch TV, so you're up till about 11, half 11, catching up on maybe a few soaps or something, you know?
So you've just been in a bad cycle for 23 years now?
Yeah, more or less.
And, like, do you think... Are you going to stop completely, Paul? Are you going to play a bit of reserves next year, or is that you completely done?
No, that will be the football playing and the things over. Unless there's a charity game or something that someone needs done or something like that, there we'll pull the gloves on again. But as for competitive football, I can't really see myself playing any further now, to be honest.
Yeah, and you've got it's 4 children you have, is that right?
3 girls and a boy, yeah.
And any of them keepers?
Jesus, no. the girls are the oldest. They're doing the camogie at the minute, so they're playing away and haven't found the position yet. But sure, they're all looking to try and do goals. You did it, Daddy, so I'll do it. And I says, no, you will not. Get out that field.
You want
and,
better things.
The wee man's only 6, so he's on the 6 at the minute. He's just sort of under 6 is only a bit of crack at the minute, you know, what they'll be doing.
Well, once you get the under 8s, it's all serious then, though.
Ah, yes. You know, we let them find their own way. We'll not push them too hard.
But have they, in a way, made you enjoy the victories a little bit more? I see some nice photos, you know, like in recent years, they're on the pitch with you. And have you been able to savour it a bit more with the children around?
Oh, certainly, yeah. Like, you know, any sort of finals or big games are not there. First people nearly turn around and they tell their runs at you, you know, so... It's been very enjoyable to let them see a wee bit of what I do on the field, and you know, rather than maybe in some cases you would have to look back at maybe YouTube videos. At least, you know, it's nice to be where the kids are in a position to actually see you playing on the field and see what you devote so much of your time towards, so that maybe in later years they could maybe understand why Daddy was away in the evening for so much.
And what's the plan going to be though when you get to January and you probably get itchy feet and you're not heading out to the gym or training? What's in store for you now?
Well, I don't intend being totally immobile. I'll probably do a bit of gym work maybe, and just to keep the weight off more than anything else. I suppose, I don't know, possibly a bit of coaching maybe when the time's right, a bit of things like that. Young fellas doing under 6s can help Oshie Nationalists be up at his equal too. And you know, it's funny, we're up at the under 6s and there's so many pass players up in the field. Like, there's one night there was the McIntyre's there, you know, the likes of me, Francie, Aaron, Stephen. You know, you can nearly puck a team together there for all the fathers that were up there in the field with the young ones coming through to that age to start playing football and that. So there'll always be something to be done, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose that's probably why you're keen, yeah, to keep the girls at the camogie and the young boy at football, because of that bond. Like, I know you talked before about the friendship, but you're sort of knitted for life now, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it. You know, the cycle will continue. You know, as they come to look to be training, you'll always be running to training and probably staying at training and seeing what they're doing, possibly giving a hand out and, you know, just encouraging them along if that's what they want to do. You know, I wouldn't be the type one to say you have to do this and that's the be all and end all. You know, if they're happy enough to go ahead and devote their time to the sport, that's their own decision. But I'll be there to back them and whatever they do decide to do, you know.
Yeah, well, here, Paul, thanks very much for the time, and I hope you don't get pestered too much by the reserve manager next year.
Oh, I think he's happy enough. There's a lot of youngsters there to do goals at the minute, so we let them rattle away at it.
And congratulations on a ridiculous career.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
All right, see you later, Paul.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home about where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at
of
me
a crowded area, isn't
exactly
it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a pointing coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, I was down in Sandyford during the week talking to Paul Geaney. Is it Geaney or Geaney? Geaney, is it Geaney if you're from Kerry?
I'm not actually sure. Tomato, tomato.
Geaney. I was talking to Paul Geaney. I was at the LucasAid Sports Made to Move sessions and they were playing this trampoline dodgeball thing. And I'll tell you what, Jack Barry was unbelievable at trampoline dodgeball. It was him, Ronan Shanahan, Jack Savage, and Barry and Geaney against Kilkenny hurlers. And Jack Barry, Kerry, because Jack Barry was catching everything, he was blocking everything, and absolutely pelting boys with these balls. Unbelievable. I was talking to Geaney about it, and I said to him, like, geez, Barry's very good at trampoline dodgeball. And he just said, oh, he's very good at everything. That man, anything he turns his hand to, he's brilliant at. But yeah, so just when the football career doesn't work out or when it.
But did anyone inspire to him?
Jack Barry, exactly. Yeah. I was actually thinking this because I think Jack Savage is playing this weekend in the championship. And I was imagine you got injured playing trampoline dodgeball. Going back to your manager, going, I was up in Sandyford and jumping on trampoline, yeah, and pull the hamstring.
Just say tight hamstring, that's all.
So I caught up with Paul Geaney anyway, and I asked him. Apparently, he was one of the only Kerry lads. I think he was the only Kerry footballer at the game Mayo v Dublin, the Ireland final. So I was interested to see why he was there.
Just there to enjoy the occasion, really. I suppose next year is a different story. Like, that's going to be, you know, that's next year, look after itself, hopefully. But just there to enjoy the day and enjoy the spectacle.
What do you see when you're watching them? Because there are two teams that you have beaten in recent history. I know you don't have a problem with Dublin yourself. You've only lost twice to Dublin, is that right?
Yeah, it would be right, yeah. In that I was playing, that's all. But I suppose I haven't played enough against them in the meaningful games. The two I lost were the meaningful games. Like, they were championship semi final and championship final. So, you know, they're the big games that you want to be getting those results in. But two of the best teams in the country, obviously, you know, in the last couple of years, and it'll just show you if you look at the run that both of them have had, really. Like, you know, Dublin winning 5 All-Irelands and Mayo getting there and thereabouts every year, no matter what. So, you know, their pedigree shows itself, and it's going to be tough to get to their level again, you know, to try and hopefully win the All-Ireland again sometime soon.
And what do you think you need to work on most or right now for 2018 to get to that level?
I don't know. It's hard to put the finger on it, to be honest. You know, it's a long time to think about it over the winter, but it's hard to put the finger on it, to be honest, because you know you're capable of playing to that level, but we just didn't this year. So when it really mattered in the championship, you know. So I suppose in the league we got to that level against Dublin in the league final. That's very early in the year to be producing that. If you're not going to produce it later on in the year, you know, if it was one or the other, you'd hope to produce it in the championship. But I suppose it was important for us as well to win the league and to beat Dublin and Croke Park as well. You know, it was something that wasn't really talked about within our camp, but it was, you know, elsewhere, probably, you know, amongst supporters and that, saying that the team wasn't good enough to compete with the likes of Dublin. And at the time, I suppose that was an important win for us. And it was nice to win a National League medal as well. You know, Dublin have dominated that as well the last couple of years. So it was nice to get National medal as well, you know. But obviously just performing better on the biggest days of the year is probably something that we'll have to try and do better.
And would you have celebrated that National League?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, any medal is it's what we play for. You know, Munster finals celebrated. You know, of course, you're going to have to celebrate the wins in those days, because if you don't, you're basically you're depressing yourself. Really, I suppose if you're not celebrating your wins and you're you know and not appreciating when you do win, because you lose enough throughout your career in various different levels, and we train to win, and you know when you do win, it's important to celebrate. So we had a cut off it right after the National League, but it was a bit of a period then between the National League and going back through with the clubs, the county championship, and the various county competitions, about 5 or 6 weeks. So there was a bit of a gap then to the championship, and you know, it just coincided with that. So it was probably a tough period, really, but every county has that, so it's no excuse.
Well, like, I don't want to get into like restructuring the championship and that with you, but do you feel like Kerry are probably at a bit more of a disadvantage, because there's sometimes there's 8 weeks between championship matches or whatever, the way it is at the moment?
I suppose it depends on who you ask. most people have the opinion that it's an advantage to Kerry because they get to the quarterfinal more or less every year. But I don't know. It's hard to know unless you see the other side of it as well. But next year the new structure is coming in for quarterfinals, and I suppose it's a small step, but it is a step in the right direction, in my opinion. But I don't know. We'll see what it'll bring. I suppose bringing the All Ireland series forward to be finished in August is only a good thing for clubs as well. You know, it's a positive step. And I know a lot of people still, you know, would think that it's not good enough and whatever. But it is a step in the right direction. So hopefully, you know, they will fix the problem of the whole thing. But at least it's one step in the right direction, and you know, Rome isn't built in a day, so that old adage, you know. Yeah.
And that, I suppose, the Super 8s will probably help Kerry, not Kerry more than anyone, but it will definitely be an advantage in that, like, Mayo were so battle hardened by the time they got to the semi final, whereas you probably weren't as much.
Yeah, well, games are like invaluable. You know, I've said it before that, course, like, you'd want to, I'd say the ratio is maybe 5, 6 or 7 to 1 for training to games, like, you know, and it's not enough really for any player. If you could, you play every weekend and train midweek, and you know, that's what any player would want. Like, even in some of the other professional sports, or you know, they train the weekends and they train during the week, and it's handy enough training, and then they play at the weekends, but they've their pre-season done and they're set up for the year then, and I'd imagine it's a lot more enjoyable that way. But of course our sport isn't professional, but you know, even amateur rugby players have games at the weekends. Amateur soccer players have games every weekend. You know, in even the Kerry district leagues, you know, they have games every single weekend, and they might train during the week there, and it's all about the games. And you know, we seem to have it flipped over the other way, that it's almost all training and very few games. You know, so I can see it definitely having a positive effect on Kerry football, senior football, that there's more games in the championship, because you know, obviously that's what we want to do. We want to play games. Yeah.
You have a long few months here of no football, really. Thankfully, you told me beforehand that Dingle are out. I'm still trying to get used to the Kerry championships, the club championships, the way they are. Like, but you told me you don't play for West Kerry. So what would you do now for the next few months?
I suppose training with the international squad at the moment, so I'll give that a go and try and make the squad for Australia. And obviously I've a lot of work to catch up on in the pub from taking off days left, right and centre during the season, you know, so hours to make up there, and a small boy at home as well, it'll be needing a bit of attention as well, because you know, during the season we'll be gone most nights of the week and working during the days as well, so yeah, so plenty of my play to keep me going.
I was going to ask you about the pub. Like, your head must be fried in there. Is it boys asking you about football all the time?
It can be, all right, yeah. The winter's probably the worst of it because of the big gap between your last game, which is this year is the last, and when you lose a game, you want to go out the next week and try and fix that, you know, or put in a good performance, and then people are only talking about the good performance. You know, as they say, you're only as good as your last game, but yeah. When you have a big period in between those games, you know, the negativity can linger, and that's the toughest thing, I suppose, about being in the pub in the winter months, that everyone has an opinion and everyone wants to tell you their opinion too, yeah. Like, so, you know, that's fair enough too, but It can be tough sometimes, all right, but it comes part and parcel with it.
And do you get into it much with people, or do you just let them have their say and carry on? Like, or do you actually get into good debates or anything like that?
I suppose it depends on what mood I'm in, to be honest, you know. Some days you just don't want to talk about, but other days it's fine, you know, and you'll chat away with them. But, yeah, it just, I suppose it just depends on, I suppose, what road they go, what route they go down as well, or what way they approach the conversation. Yeah. If they're fairly bullish about it, you know, I often wouldn't entertain too much. But yeah, if it's a proper discussion and there's valid points being made, you know, of course I'm going to be engaged in the conversation, and you know, we're pretty level headed as well out our way. So, you know, it's all part of it.
Darren Sullivan was saying something about, like, it's tough, like, you know, being in Kerry, and like, especially with the tradition, and like everybody knows someone has won 4 or 5 All Irelands. Like, do you find that there's not a big expectation, because that's always going to come, but almost sometimes it's pressure.
Can be pressure, yeah. I suppose, I don't know, like, what other fellas would feel. I don't feel too much pressure, like, but what I want to do is I want to achieve during my career, like, and I want to achieve as much as I can, and I want to be the best player that I can be. You know, and hopefully helped Kerry teams to win All-Irelands and win as much as we can, like, because we're only here for a short while. There's only maybe a 10-year career in some guys and less for others. You know, I was 23 breaking into the squad, so it's probably going to be less for me, especially looking at those four minor teams coming, they're after coming through, like, and what's coming after that. So pressure will be on me to I suppose, keep performing for Kerry, and that's the pressure that's on me. There's no real pressure, but as you said, anywhere you look in Kerry, there's all Ireland medals. So I suppose that's something to try and aspire to as well, you know. But I wouldn't see it as major pressure, but I would like to finish up myself with one or two medals, you know.
And just finally, do you need Kieran Donaghy to stay this year?
I suppose it's important that every fella is in the right place. If they're putting on the Kerry jersey, and it's down to the individuals, and if fellas are going to give their lives to Kerry football, because that's what it requires, and Kieran has always done that, so it's up to Kieran. You know, he's going to make his own decision in the coming months, and it doesn't matter what anyone else says in the public or elsewhere. It's down to Kieran and Eamon Fitzmaurice to make that decision. And as I said last week, I'd love to see Kieran coming back, and everyone on the panel, I'd love to see them all back next year to give it another go.
That's super, Paul. Thanks very much.
You ready? Let's go.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out 30, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go! 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. Okay, a lot of great club fixtures coming up this weekend. Some of them are on air, some of them are on TG Cahir on Saturday. We've got South Kerry v Cairns O'Rahilly in the Kerry County Championship. We've got Dr. Crooks v West Kerry as the semi-final. They're both on air, 3 p.m. and 4:45 p.m. On Sunday, we've got the Carlow Senior Football Championship final. That's the third. Era Og v Rathvilly. That's at Cullen Park, that's the third on TG Cahir. Before that, we've got live game from Tipperary, Boris Ali v Thurles Sarsfields at Semple Stadium at 3:30 p.m. on TG Cahir. That's the Hurling Championship final. There's some unbelievable games coming up. There's also swashbuckling set of fixtures out west. The Mayo Football Championship quarter final. Briefy v Clare Morris, Ballintubber v Hollymount, Knockmore v Castlebar. They're all Saturday night. Gary Moore v Ballinas Stephenites. Connor, what do you think?
Yeah, they're going to be really good. There was a bit of a kind of turn up for the books. The last the last round of group games of the weekend were kind of running off fairly quickly with Mayo having got to the final again. But Castlebar Mitchells were beaten by Ballina. So now, as a result of finishing second in the group, Castlebar have to play Knockmore in the quarterfinal. That was the final last year. So that's the biggest one. I don't think many people would have foreseen Castlebar not winning their group. But they're beaten by a Ballina side that are a bit of a sleeping giant. I mean, Ballina have kind of fallen off the radar a little bit for the last few years, but they've got Enda Gavari in charge. He would have managed Mayo to an All-Ireland minor title there a few years back.
Yeah.
And they're actually in the same league as us, going really well. Only lost one game. They're going to get promoted. And just like a team with, like, Ballina were in All-Ireland final. They won an All-Ireland final, as you know, as recently as 2005. Always been a big giant in Mayo football, so they could really be on the way back. Just watch out for Brafey. Scored 6-14 against Balladreen at the
beat
weekend.
Beat them by 20 points or something, spiking.
Yeah, Conor O'Shea was man of the match. Got, I think, 2-2. By all accounts, all the O'Shea's are really good. Brafey are a good team anyway, and to have the O'Shea's back in. All the O'Shea's played actually 6 days after the All-Ireland final. They played in the league and really did damage, especially Conor by all accounts. But really good games. But Knockmore, if I was going to be looking out for anyone, it'd be Knockmore versus Castlebar.
You see what would really annoy me though, if I was a Mayo fan or just a football fan in general, is the timing. So Knockmore, you're talking about playing Castlebar, it's obviously a great game. It's in Ballina at 5 p.m. but at 6 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. in McHale Park, you have two games. Could you not just put one of those games, like put the Knockmore game a bit earlier so you can get the all three?
So you can go to as many of them, There'll actually be the ones in McHale Park, if I'm not mistaken. There's a Mayo TV service that has started out, that has kind of been operating the last couple of years. So they're going to show them live. They're going to stream them live on Saturday evening. So that's great for...
Where?
On Mayo TV. I'll have to get the exact details, but if you type in Mayo GAA streaming, it'll come up for you. But really good games, really good quality of coverage as well. So if you're not doing anything Saturday evening, give it a look.
What's the story with Westport? Like, they won the All-Ireland Intermediate title last year, beat your team in the county final on the way.
Comprehensively.
They're now during the relegation playoff. Obviously, they got promoted to senior, but I thought they might have kicked on a bit.
Yeah, that group where they were in was really tight. So Gary Moore are in the quarterfinal. They drew with Gary Moore. They played Knockmore at the weekend. Actually, I didn't get to see it, but I heard that Lee Keegan and Kevin McLaughlin were on each other, which would have been a joy to behold. But they only lost to Knockmore by 5 points, so they weren't too far away. And like, you have to take into account with Westport as well, is that they haven't had a break, so they would have played the All-Ireland club final in February, would have been straight back into the league, and that can go one way or the other. You can kind of get momentum from kind of so many games, but at the other hand, you just, like, you pick up injuries, like people kind of head away and stuff like that. But I don't think that they've two games to save themselves now. If they lose their first relegation playoff, they've another playoff, because only one goes down, and I can't see them going down. I think they'll hold their own in senior for a few years. Yeah.
The ladies junior final replay between Derry and Fermanagh is on in Clonus at 1:30 on Sunday. Obviously it ended in a draw, controversial draw, after Fermanagh got a ridiculous penalty in the last minute to level it up.
How well was it taken though?
That's taken well enough, but I tell you, like, the referee sort of evened it up then, because Fermanagh should have definitely had a free in the last second, and the ref didn't give that one. So she was playing for the draw. In Cavan, Castle Rahan are playing Cavan Gales in the football final, 3:30 on Sunday. Leitrim football final,
Glen Carmel Manor Hamilton.
Good man. Are playing Mohill, and that's in Park Sean McDiarmida at 3:30. On Sunday, the Longford final is on. Go ahead, Connor.
Avilara versus Munlalata
at 4 p.m. at Glen and Bruce Pierce Park. A real clinker, actually, in the Ulster Hurling semi-final. Slochneil are playing Dunloy. Slochneil obviously got the semi-final last year. They won the Ulster, the first team ever from Derry to win the Ulster Hurling Championship. They're playing Dunloy. They've come through Antrim, which is always very competitive. You're probably looking at now Ballygilgett won't thank me for saying this, but you're probably looking at the winner in this match in the semi-final. That's an
straight
old
up in their dressing room wall.
2:30 p.m. I mean, that's a great game.
Yeah, absolutely. And Slochneil did the treble again, if I'm not mistaken, very recently. Which
third
is
year in a row. They've won Camogie, they've won football, and they've won the hurling championship in Derry. Third year in a row treble. And, like, you know, again, like, it sounds like this, like, Cross McGlen sort of unit that's just a juggernaut over the rest of Derry. But this, like, they've won, no, in fairness, they've won 4 football championships in a row, but they've only ever won 5 football championships ever.
Ever, yeah.
The first ever was 2004. Like, so before that, like, you know, there was nothing. Like, Sacknell have really just, Mickey Moore took over them and they haven't lost a championship match, and they are just on course again for more history.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw them again in the All-Ireland final. I mean, they just keep coming back. Like, and I felt so hard for them last year after Dr. Crooks beat them, but listen, we're anyway, not getting into it now. Kerry Hurling final is also on Sunday. Ballyduff against Lixnaw and Austin Stack Park. Roscommon Hurling final. 4 Roads against Park Pierce's at 3 p.m. and obviously the Tipperary one, which we mentioned. The pick of them all, I know we talk about Mayo a lot, but I'll be interested to see these Kerry semi-finals on Air Sport. You got the divisional sides, you got West Kerry against Crooks, and you got South Kerry against Cairns O'Rahilly. I mean, I don't understand why every county isn't doing this. Like, if you're not in senior, if your club isn't in senior, then you can play for a divisional side which plays in senior. And if a divisional side wins that championship, then the way Kerry do it, they've got 2 yeah, separate championships. If West Kerry, for example, go on and win the county championship, then whoever won the club championship, which is Dr. Crooks, or they've already won it, then they will represent the county in Munster.
It was done in Mayo until, I'd say, very recently, until the last 10 or 15 years. But the only thing is the players who represent those clubs, who represent the divisional clubs, already represent their own clubs. And you just have to find the time to fit in, you know, the club schedule as it is, and then to get all those players together to play for their divisional yeah, sides and accommodate that all in. I think it's a great idea as well. But
would you care much playing for the divisional side? Like, would you have much passion?
I didn't play for the divisional side, but at the time when it was in Kelchimaa, my club were senior, so the divisional sides were made up of intermediate and junior. It could have been actually just junior clubs.
But it's crazy to think, like, you know, Jack Barry, for example, is a junior player right now. Sean Kavanagh, for ages, is a junior player. Like, you know, it's mad to think these players who don't get a shot at the senior championship, and it would only light up the senior championship if you have those type of guys in it.
Be really interesting dynamic, though, because you're playing with guys who are your fiercest rivals. And I know, like, if you're playing for your county, you're playing against your fierce rivals all the time. This is your neighbouring club, and then all of a sudden,
yeah,
you know, beat shit out of them one day, and then the next day, your teammates, like. But no, I think it's great as well. But I suppose the only thing with them is they don't go through to represent the county then on the All-Ireland stage. So that's a bit of a drawback. But
yeah. And well, sure, if it doesn't work out for Jack Barry, he's always got trampoline dodgeball.
Yeah, yeah.
That's everything we have. We'll see you next week.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.